Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to Side Hustle Pro, the podcast that teaches you to build and grow your side hustle from passion project to profitable business. And I'm your host, Nikayla Matthews Okome. So let's get started. Hey, hey guys, welcome back to the show. Today in the guest chair, we have Lola Banjo. Lola is the founder, creative director, and designer of Silver and Riley, a premier luxury travel and fashion leather goods brand made exclusively and exquisitely in Italy. Self-described as a dreamer and a doer, Lola launched Silver and Riley in October 2019 with one main goal: creating stylish, functional, and luxurious pieces that do not break the bank, yet make you look and feel like a million bucks. Each Silver and Riley product is designed in a way that combines her passion for problem solving and building things better through her experience as an engineer and now as a corporate strategist with her love for fashion, which she picked up from her late mother, whom the brand is dedicated to. She draws, conceptualizes, and then works with her manufacturers to bring all Silver and Riley items to life. In today's episode, Lola shares how she manages a high-level executive position at a global tech company while managing a booming business. Let's get right into it. Thank you for being here. It's such a pleasure to be able to chat with you and interview you. You know, I've done some Instagram stalking, so I'm just loving your brand, Silver and Riley, and everything you do. And I just need to know, what made you start side hustling, and particularly why bags?
So it actually started about 10 years ago. I was in business school, and I was in between my first and second year. I was interning. So my internship was at Accenture, which is a strategy of management consulting firm. So I had to travel for work every week. And of course, that wasn't my first time traveling, but yeah. I got to encounter business travelers a lot and really observe things that people struggle with in the day-to-day life of traveling. So I started just thinking about like how to make traveling simpler and easier in general. And you know, I had so many different ideas, and that's what business school inspires, just a whole just deluge of ideas, right? But I didn't know where to kind of nail it down to. And then one flight that I took, it was one I was coming back from my travels, like on Thursday night. It was like particularly cold. It was in the summer, but the plane was like just freezing. And I had asked the air hostess for a blanket. I was sitting in economy at the time, and I asked the air hostess for a blanket, and she's like, "No, blankets are only offered in first class."
Oh, wow.
And then, And then it kind of was like one of those things. I was like, oh, really? Okay. So we're supposed to freeze back here? Because it was super cold on the plane. But it sparked an idea in me. And I was like, oh, I need to create some kind of like travel accessories where, you know, you can bring on things like blankets and things that you need for the conveniences of travel. So I started ideating on this travel product, right? It was like this portable blanket that you can bring on the plane. At the time, there is like examples of that on the market. But at the time, there was nothing. I searched and researched and I was like, okay, you know what? I can create this. So I went on to my significant other at the time. I was like, I have this great idea. And we just started like sketching things out. He was in marketing, I was in strategy. That's what we were studying in business school. Yeah. And so we built this business plan together to launch this travel accessories brand. And then it came time to have like the funding for it. And that's where things kind of got stuck, because trying to pitch it to, like, you know, VCs at the time, went to the entrepreneurship lab at school, and it all came down to, you don't have a viable product yet. We can't give you money until you have something, right, where you can show.
So they wanted you to actually produce the product. Okay.
Exactly. Produce the product and actually have some traction, build a customer base, have a user base, and, you know, get some feedback, all which required money. And if you know, like, anything, like, regarding like your MBA, you drain your savings and you're getting loans. So I was already in a financial hole before going into that. So I was like, okay.
So you're like, how am I going to start this business?
So let me like put the idea to the side for now. So I put it to the side and I started my career in strategy consulting. But you know, when you have an idea and you have a dream. Now, I have had over 100 business ideas in the course of my life, right? I have written down all kinds of business plans. Like, you know, like my, I think most people have a lot of ideas, but I actually also flesh it out to, you know, writing out business plans. And I've done that for so many different ideas, but this was the one that just kept on coming back to me and kept on nagging at me. Yeah. And I was like, there's something here. So I just started paying attention. Like, as I traveled more, I was in strategy consulting for 7 years. So I got to travel a lot during that time. So as I traveled more, I would just observe more, I write things down. So my idea started to kind of transform to like travel bags, you know, duffels, rolling luggage, and really researching that market. And I was like, there's a viable case here. Everyone travels for the most part, and everyone uses a bag, right? So there is a case, there's this really strong business case here, but I didn't know how to start it. And I was so immersed in my career at the time. I poured myself into my career and I was doing very well. But the better you do in your career, the more work, the more responsibility.
Yep, that's how they reward you.
Exactly.
You get more work on your plate.
You get more work on your plate. I had all these direct reports and things so it was much harder to commit to it. But the idea just never left me. Mm. It would like literally haunt me. Like, I would,
even though it was on the back burner of your mind, it just never left.
I was forcing it to be in the back burner, right? Yeah. It was naturally wanted to come out. You know, it was nagging at me so much. Like, I would literally think about this business every single day.
Wow.
You know, and I would envision my life around, like, when I thought about it, I would just be like, okay, focus, get back to work, you know?
What were some of the things that made you keep putting it on the back burner? Like, when you thought about it, was it the money? Was it not knowing where to begin? Was it thinking like, who is going to make this luxury item I have in mind? Like, I don't want it to be, you know, just any kind of bag.
I think that's exactly all the above, Michaela. Like, so it was, okay, I needed to save up, because at this point it was apparent to me that there was no VC that was going to back this. And I actually got to a point where I kind of got like cocky, even though I didn't have anything. Yeah, I was like, I don't want anybody to take my equity, so I'm not giving up any equity. So I'm going to do this on my own, right?
Right.
I didn't have anything yet. I didn't have a sketch. I didn't
equity
have anything.
And nothing.
But I was still thinking about equity. I'm like, equity of 0% of 0%. Equity of 0% is 0%.
But anyway, a lot of people, like, do that. Yeah.
Right. So it was that, but it was also just not knowing how to navigate the landscape. Mm-hmm. I had not had anyone that started anything like as in my mind as big as I wanted to start at the time. Mm-hmm. I didn't know where to look, you know. And so around some time in 2018, everything changed. So as I mentioned, like, this business is, it's been like 10 years, actually more than a decade in the making at this point.
Wow.
Because I thought about it in 2010, right? But around 2018, I was like, you know what? I'm never going to get away from this. idea. I know there's something there, and I will always regret not exploring it at this time. And I was like, it's now or never.
Yeah.
And I literally just took 2 weeks of PTO. And I said, let me just dedicate the time to just like fleshing this out with no distractions. Literally put my phone on do not disturb and just like started researching things, you know, and just like trying to ideate around like, what is this business? What exactly is it? And then I said, okay, let me do some consumer insight studies. I hired a firm and I paid some money. And at the time it was really still just travel products. So I was like, I want to develop a travel bag that is, you know, combining all these things, all these functionalities and qualities that people are saying they wanted. Like I was scouring sites, like retail sites, like just reading feedback and reading reviews from different customers in terms of what they wanted. So I hired the consumer insights firm because, of course, as I was researching on Google, there was so many different directions of where you can go and produce. Yeah. And I wanted to nail that down. I wanted to like, where should I manufacture? That was the number one thing I wanted to ask. I already had an inkling that there was going to come back as Italy, but I wanted to confirm it. I don't want to use my own biases to make that decision.
And why did you have that inkling? Just based on the luxury bags that you buy?
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm,
exactly. Pretty much like if you think about all the luxury fashion houses, they're either made in Italy or in France. Mm-hmm. Most of them are made in Italy, but I wasn't sure if that was important to people. I felt like it was made in Italy just because that's origin of where it comes from, where, you know, Italian leather, there's a lot of leather being made. There's a lot of family history and all kinds of stuff in there. But I wanted to really pinpoint if it was actually important to the consumer for the bag to be made in Italy, as opposed to just the fact that it's made in Italy by nature. Right. So that's the first thing I wanted to confirm. And then the second thing was just asking people about the conveniences they'll want in their bag and their products to make their life easier, confirming that as well. And then running focus groups. I actually ran like 3 focus groups when I was started, and I had like 10 people.
And was
people,
this through the consumer insights firm?
No, so the consumer insights firm is separate, and then also the focus group. So the consumer insights firm, I really just wanted them to actually like, you know, get data about what people like. So it was a randomized sample of people. And the way those firms work is like the bigger the sample size, the more expensive it is. So I think I settled on like 200 people. So they collected insights from 200 people. And the questions were around like, when you think about leather, we try not to make the questions lead in because we didn't want people to, we didn't want to feed them the answer, but it was just like things like when you think about leather, and where it's manufactured, what country comes to mind, things like that, you know, and also does the place that your bag is manufactured matter? It was a set of about 50 questions that were asked to be able to get to Italy, and everything just kept on saying Italy, Italy. I mean, literally, like, it was like 90% of people were like, okay, it matters. And I think the biggest disparity is that there is a connotation from, you know, bags that come from, you know, certain Asian markets versus Italy. And I wanted to kind of like tease out the comparison, right? You know, because obviously there's a significant price point in manufacturing, price point differential in manufacturing from those two markets.
Right.
And as a producer, you always want to go to a lower cost market.
Right.
but I was like, no, you know what? That's not going to fly. And then I actually did do research. I did reach out to some manufacturers in those other markets to get prototypes of their product. And I was able to compare myself, and it was like night and day. So I was like, okay, there's no way I will produce in anywhere else other than Italy or comparable. Like, so there are also some
but
comparable
markets.
But
that's awesome that you went and got those prototypes made in the different countries to see what the quality would be. Okay.
Yeah.
Now this is already sounding like...
Right. It was expensive. Yeah. And it was about a 9-month long process for me in totality, from the time that I started doing the research to the time that I launched, because I got samples from across different markets. I actually, at the end of 2018, I booked a 2-week trip once everything confirmed Italy.
Yeah.
And I started trying to like reach out to manufacturers in Italy, not getting any responses, not being able to speak Italian. my crazy ass book. Oh, I probably can't.
No, you can.
It's okay. So I booked a 2-week trip to Italy, to on the outskirts of Milan, where there was a lot of leather manufacturers. Mm-hmm. And I said I was just going to go door to door, literally go door to door for this, because they were not responding to me or they were saying no. And I was just like, I need to build some kind of relationship face to face. And I went door to door. I had a list of factories that I had to visit, got my Uber, and just literally went there. And actually, two of those days, I hired a translator because it was becoming difficult to communicate. Mm-hmm. And essentially, I had a set of questions. But what I was trying to accomplish was just to find my manufacturer, find the one that wanted to work with me and be able to incorporate a lot of those things that I wanted in my products, but also had the values that aligned with mine, the sustainability goals that aligned with mine, and and things like that. So
at this point, did you have a bag sketched out as like the first thing you wanted to make? Okay.
Yeah. The very
first
bag.
So when you went there, you were asking them, can you make this? Or
can you make this bag? Yeah, exactly. So it was all like, can you make this bag for me? This is the sketch. This is what it looks like. Can you make it for me? What's the process? And the first question they will always ask me was just, do you have a backer, right? Do you have like some kind of financing? And the answer was no, I was self-funded. Now, keep in mind, over the course of like ideating on the business in 2010 to when I actually started in 2018, I did save some money because I was just like, you know what? I'm going to start putting some money towards this ambition because I don't want to get funding and I don't have anything to get funding with yet. So I wanted to save the money to start.
And when you said I want to save money, did you have an amount in mind? Like this is going to require 10,000. This is going to require 100,000. Like what was that amount?
Michaela, I thought it was going to require 20,000, right?
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised. Do you want me to share now?
Well, how much it actually required? Like, I'm thinking Italian leather and my mind goes 100,000. What did it actually require?
I have invested, well, to start the business, I invested 120,000. So I thought it was 20,000, right?
Yeah.
And I was just like, I had in my mind that everything, startup costs, it was not going to be more than 40,000. It was 20,000 to produce, but then I had all these other costs, right? To set up the infrastructure of the business. So I put a $40,000 cap on everything.
Ah.
But girl, once I went and I was looking for manufacturers and they were talking about the minimum order quantity, the MOQ, which is basically that terminology is like the minimum that you can order for a particular SKU, right?
Right, right.
So I was thinking that I will find a manufacturer and they'll be able to make me 10 pieces of this item so I can test the market.
Right.
No
right.
way. They were like, we require 1,000.
They were like,
pieces.
Girl, you cannot pre-sale this. You
yeah,
need to buy
exactly.
it.
They're like, we require 1,000 pieces up front and there's no finance terms where I was like, oh yeah, they'll be able to give you net 30, net 60. They're like, we don't know you. We have no motivation to give you any of those terms. You have to pay everything up front. And you know, the average bag, so the bag that I was producing, it was the cost then was because also my minimums were lower. So it was higher in cost. It was coming up to like 300. And these folks were telling me that I had to order 1,000 pieces, right? Mm-hmm. And it was 300,000. Where do I get that from? You know, so I kept on searching. I kept on talking, kept on getting rejected because my minimums I was looking for, I was like, okay, let me try to find a manufacturer that would take 100, right?
Yeah.
As a minimum. And also would just want to do a lower, a lesser amount of run. Like, so a lot of them will want you to have a collection as opposed to just like two bags, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was, I talked to 136. That number is going to be forever ingrained in my brain. I'm going to tell my grandkids the story, my great grandkids by the grace of God. Like, I will tell them the story of getting rejected by 136 manufacturers before I found the one single one that said, yes, I can work with you within your parameters. And they also checked the boxes that I was looking for. Mm-hmm. And it was like this major breakthrough of just like feeling so excited and relieved, but then also exhausted before I even started, before I actually had a product, I was already tired. I was like, how do people start businesses? This is crazy.
Well, first of all, congrats. And were all those rejections on that trip, that 2-week trip you took?
No. During that 2-week trip that I took, I went and saw maybe about 25 manufacturers. Uh-huh. And some meetings were very quick. It was like, nope. Some were longer, right? Some actually sat down and gave me you know, the proper respect and welcome and like, oh, okay. We'll like to work with you in the future. And funny enough, one of those that did receive me well, I work with them almost exclusively now because they were not able to work with me for, because the first manufacturer I did find is not them. Right. So they're one of the ones that initially, I know, girl, there's so much.
We have time.
Okay, I love it. Because the first manufacturer I found, I'll tell you that story. But anyway, so one of the ones that initially like rejected me, but in such a respectful, loving way, it was just like, the business case was not aligned to them at the time, right? They did not have the capacity to accommodate what I was looking for, what I needed at the time, but they did it in such a loving, respectful way that when I was able to bolster up my financial resources and my manufacturing capacity, I went straight back to them and I was like, I want to work with you guys because I love what you do. And I just love the way you handled me as a potential customer. You didn't have a dime from me, but you treated me in such a respectful way. But having that one, the first one that did say yes, the first breakthrough in Southern Italy, I was so relieved and so excited to finally have a working prototype.
I can imagine. And what was it about that one? Like, what is it about what you presented, you know, that everyone else said no to, that they were willing to work with? What do you think it was that made them say yes?
I think at the time, unbeknownst to me, they were also kind of just like starting up their customer list and they were excited to kind of just, maybe even let, you know, just newcomers or like people with less experience in that industry come in because they were looking for customers as well. They're looking to bolster up their Rolodex, but it was not a Cinderella story. It was not a success story with that first manufacturer. No.
Why is that?
Yeah, I will say I was grateful even now in retrospect, even though the story didn't end well with that first manufacturer, I'm grateful that I had that breakthrough because I think it was just God's way of telling me like, it's going to work. You know, you may knock on 136 doors that say no, but you eventually get one. So even though that didn't end up to be like the ideal manufacturer, you know, that boost of confidence and finding that one, because after that one, I was able to go back and find one almost immediately. I went back to the other one, like very quickly. And everything kind of just started like rolling from there. It's like after you've gotten so much rejection, you start to kind of lose some kind of, you know, even though I've always seen myself as a positive, optimistic, like go get in, like just I would just keep on going.
It does something to you.
Yeah, it does something to you psychologically.
Were you able to create that first slate of products and sell and at least recoup some of the manufacturing costs, or did you sever the relationship during the process?
So let me tell you the story about that one that I did find. Unfortunately, here's what happens, right? In the manufacturing process, you find the manufacturer, you do the sketch, right? I do a lot of my drawings myself. And then they make it into a paper prototype. You accept it. And then they actually make a physical prototype. They send it to you. You inspect it. You make changes. And then they go make the production, right? So that whole cycle is about 6 weeks long, right? So once I did that, right, for that first manufacturer, I made a big order because the prototypes that they sent me checked the boxes. And I was like, it's great. So I made a big order and I remember sending the biggest check at this point that I had sent at that point. It was like $80,000, right? Wow. And I paid for the order. And when the production bags came in, the first set of production bags came in, half of them were completely different from the prototypes that I approved. And I actually learned after the fact that this happens to so many people when they're starting their businesses. Essentially what the guy did was, you know, send me the perfect prototypes, right? With the leather, the exact specificity of the leather and the design that I wanted. Right. But then when it came to production, what he tried to do is like for some of the SKUs, use a lesser quality leather or lesser quality accessories. So basically now I've paid for the expensive one, right?
Right.
But he's trying to like just get a little bit more money on the side, and they do it all the time now, not necessarily just in Italy, but just in manufacturing in general. But that was a hard lesson to learn and a very expensive one, because I ended up having to scrap about $20,000 worth of product that was just like I could not in good conscience include this or send it to customers. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that I had shot my campaigns, right, with the perfect prototype.
Right.
And then I'm going to send, like, imagine, like, what you ordered. Do you know those things you send on Instagram? What I ordered versus who I was. I was like, no, that's not going to be me.
We can't do that. What did they say? What did they say we'll replace it?
It became a legal issue, right? And I wrote a 27-page document because I got a lawyer. Mm-hmm. We're going to go into arbitration. It was a big case. Mm-hmm. So what he ended up doing, because he wanted to, because I also pulled in the International Trade Committee. It was a big thing because, you know, I was thinking, even though it's $80,000, it may seem like a drop in the bucket for a lot of these governmental agencies. For me, it was like a lot more than I even thought I was going to spend, right? $80,000 is significant when you're self-funding, right? And I just felt so cheated. And I was just so angry. Like, and so I was just like, okay, you know, calm down, take up the legal case. And I found a lawyer, which was also expensive, wrote out the document. And then he said, you know what, in order to not make it go to the law and all the stuff to court, let's just find some kind of mediation, right?
Okay.
And so what he did was he sent me replacement bags that were in perfect quality, but in a lesser amount. So I wasn't able to recoup the entire $20,000. Okay. I was able to recoup about $10,000. So I was just like, you know what? This is a lesson. I'm not even going to fight it because the whole process was taking like a long time, right? So I was like, I'm not going to fight it any longer. Let me just let this go and know that that was my most expensive lesson to date. I'm going to learn a lot of other lessons, but at that time, that was my most expensive lesson. And
that lesson is going to help so many people who are listening to this. In hindsight, what do you think you could have done or what should we do differently?
What right? I Those do differently.
Yep. Okay.
What I do differently now is, whenever you have a business that has a global supply chain, you manufacture in a different country, you do anything like that, and you place a large order, you have to, first of all, be there at the point of shipment, right? Mm-hmm. You have to have someone that's there at the point of shipment, like a quality control, quality assessor, something like that, at the start of the relationship when you're still building trust. Now, when you already have the relationship, like I have with my current manufacturer, I trust that if they're going to, if they tell me that they're going to send me this, they're going to send me that because it's actually in their best interest. Now they know that my business is a viable business, is bringing in revenue. They don't want to sever the relationship with me as well. So they're always going to do right by me. But at the start, you know, the manufacturers don't know that yet. You could just be another, because so many people start businesses, right? Mm-hmm. Every single year they fail. So for them, it could just be a one-time order. So they don't care about that relationship. So over-indexing on relationships is important. So once you build that relationship, I've invested a lot in my relationships with my manufacturers right now. Like when they tell me that the sky is whatever color, I believe them because we have that trust with each other, but it took a long time to build. But when you don't have that relationship yet, make sure you have somebody at the point of shipment, right? So you have a quality assurance or quality control, whatever you want to call it, but somebody that's actually checking that what you ordered is what you're getting. Sometimes there's not a way to do that, you know, in person. So, you know, for instance, during COVID, a lot of people could not travel. So, you know, you had to maybe like trust that they will send you pictures or videos. So you have to ask for in-depth like evidence that everything that you actually ask for is what it is. And then make sure you also get business insurance. That's one thing I didn't do at the start, right? So I ate the cost, you know, that of every error that I've made in the first year, right? I ate all of those costs.
And your business insurance, will that apply globally?
Yes. Even like right now, I have a shipment that's on its way to me and there's about $300,000 of products, right? Anything can happen, right?
Yeah.
Pirates could seize the ship.
That's real. That's what I need.
Yeah. Exactly. Anything can happen. Yeah. So it covers every business situation. It could also be you have an employee that stole from you. That's business insurance. Like, so there's so many different business insurance products, right? Of course, if you have one that's like comprehensive that covers every situation, it's more expensive. But every company offers business insurance, right? And you pay the premiums, you know, you get the insurance that you feel like you need. But I think that's what a lot of us don't do. I didn't have the advice to do that at the start of my business, right? Because you know, I didn't know I needed it. Yeah. Right. So a lot of the cost that, you know, a lot of the mistakes that were made, or the lessons that I had to learn in the first year, I ate it, you know, so.
We talk about being self-funded, and that's one of the main reasons why I do this show and talk about side hustling, right? Because your job is that first investor. So in addition mm-hmm. to your job, were there other resources and other places you look to for capital to help you fund this business on your own?
Yeah, I did. I definitely looked at like SBA loans as well. I looked at business funding that did not require an equity investment, things like that. I think the first thing, again, I was kind of like, I don't want to give up any equity, and I was still making $0. Like, nobody wants equity of something that's still in the red, but right, I was like, I don't want to give up any equity. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs say that, but there is merit to giving up equity, because again, it can help you grow and accelerate your business and scale to a certain extent. But at that start, I think it was just a combination of, I still didn't know what I was doing yet, right? Yeah. So I wanted to really master this industry, master my business, and master what I was doing before I started pulling others in. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think also maybe some imposter syndrome was there. I didn't want to be exposed as a fraud in this industry. I was like, I don't have fashion background per se. You know, I wanted to kind of have some set of successes that I've accomplished on my own before I actually go out into the world and possibly ask for support. But mainly it was just like, I wanted to feel like I was in control of my destiny. I felt like investors may want me to leave my company right away. And I wanted to be in control of my own pace, right, in some way. So I said, you know, thankfully I do have money saved up, and, you know, I was able to tap into those personal resources to be able to, you know, get it to a certain place. So I was like, let me just ride that until I can't ride it anymore.
Right.
And, you know, see how far I can take that. So that's where the self-funding came in, but I did look at some resources here and there.
And that's still scary, you know. Kudos to you, because I mean, they're entrepreneurs or side hustlers who have to drain their 401ks, drain their savings, and they're still at the end of the day looking around like, where did my money go? What do I have to show for it? So at what stage were you able to put Silver and Riley on the market and start earning for your beautiful bags?
Thank you so much. So it was around October 2019 that I launched. And I launched in October because I wanted to launch on my mom's birthday. It's the brand is dedicated to my mom. She passed away 20 years ago. And she taught me a lot of what I know about the energy behind entrepreneurship. But it took about a year of being able to, because when I took that flight to Italy, it was November 2018. But it was also like, you know, when I first took those 2 weeks off in August 2018. So just about over a year before I actually got to the point from really sitting down to build this business to launching it. Now, my journey in total, you can say, was a decade long, right? You don't need a decade, but mine was everyone's journey is different, right? So, you know, don't feel like if you have a business idea, you have to bring it to life right away. Sometimes you have to learn some things. You have to study the industry. You have to learn the market. Everyone's pace is different. I mean, there was a sense of urgency in the fact that the dream was nagging at me. Yeah. But because I do have a full-time gig, I wasn't financially pressed to start a business. It was like, I want to get to a place where I actually have this and I'm building an enterprise. I'm not just like trying to do a fast kind of, you know, make a fast buck. I want to build a family legacy. I want to build generational wealth from this. So I'm going to take the time and be heads down and actually study the market, learn about leather, learn about production, learn about manufacturing, learn about consumers, learn about what my customers actually need, do those market research studies, those consumer insights, like build those focus groups. You know, in corporate feedback, I had really been taking the time because this is a business that I see as, you know, everyone asks me, like, what do you compare yourself to? I say Louis Vuitton. I'm not comparing myself.
No, that's right.
Right,
that's
exactly. Right. I'm like,
and that's what I see when I see your brand, you know? Yeah. And that's why, like, my mind just went to 100,000, you know, off the rip, like, of investment.
Thank
because
you.
I see that quality. And, you know, and I'm glad you mentioned that going at your own pace as well. I think that, you know, there's always nuance to everything. And so sometimes you see people who spend years and years and they don't seem to get their business off the ground. And so some people, you know, see that story and they're like, oh, I need to just go out there. And no, there's gray area. It's not black and white. Like, I love the way that you learned the industry. You went and you went straight. You took time off to go to Italy. You did consumer insights, and all of this takes money. So it's also going back to, not only are you saving, but then you're also working. You're working a really demanding job as a strategy consultant. So it's not like you have, you know, time to dilly-dally all the time. Like, there, I'm sure there were periods where you were just swamped by your actual day job.
I don't remember a period that I was not swamped. Let me put it like that. Let me put it like that.
Since I know business, that consulting life. I don't know it personally, but from what I saw,
I was like, I don't remember when I've not been swamped. It's just been, you know, but Nikayla, like with anything in life that's worth it, when you're working at it, it's going to take time and effort. Things that are worth it take time and effort, right? So for me, it's been just really knowing how to manage my time. And I don't do it perfectly. You know, I think sometimes I do get it wrong. But what I have started to adhere to when I started the business, and actually this was more from necessity than anything, when I was calling those manufacturers, when I was on the phone with Italy, I was thinking about the time zone, right? The time zone difference. There's 6 hours ahead of me. So I was always waking up at 3 or 4 a.m. to kind of get that done. So my schedule and my body clock just automatically indexed to, you wake up every day by 3 a.m. And that's a schedule I've always kept. You know, so I go to sleep every single day. I'm in bed by 10 p.m. Well, maybe except for weekends or if I'm hanging out with friends. But most normal days, I'm in bed by 10 p.m. Yeah. And I wake up around 3 a.m. and I start work. I start working on my business. And I work on my business for about 3 to 5 hours. I mean, for about 5 hours or so. You know, whether it's like, you know, the lists that read in customer emails or ideating on something, corresponding with my manufacturers, or building out the next collection. I'm doing something for my business, right? And then I start Salesforce, my job, around 9 a.m. And I work there. I don't have a 9 to 5 because I have an executive role. So it's like whenever I'm needed, right? So I could have to travel that day or something, right? But typically on an average day, I'm at work at Salesforce from 9 to maybe 6 o'clock, right?
Okay.
And then I do the personal things, you know, from 6 to 8. And then I go back and look at the business again for a couple of hours, tie up some things. If it's shipping day, then, you know, the schedule kind of changes a little bit because we ship in the evenings, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. But if it was just a normal day, then, you know, I just, you know, answer emails or whatever it is. I try to send things that I need to do to maybe editorials, whatever it is. And then I go to sleep by 10 and I wake up at 3 a.m. and rinse and repeat. So that time management and just being sticking to that schedule. Now, I definitely understand that not everyone can have the luxury of that time. Right, that schedule, because I don't have kids yet. You know, I don't have a lot of things that are maybe demanding of my time other than, you know, my work and my business and, you know, some family things that I have to also take care of. But most of my time is still kind of my own to manage, right? So I'm benefiting from that. So, you know, I just say that because, you know, I don't want to make a blanket statement like, everybody can manage it. If you have a newborn baby, that's a different ballgame.
Listen, even when I didn't have a newborn baby, I still struggled to manage my time in the way that you're describing. So it's still so admirable, like, for you to be that disciplined with your time. So you launched in October 2019. What happened next? What was the customer response? You know, what was the revenue like? Was it starting to pick up right away, or did it take some time to get that customer base?
So I launched to, I had a launch event, which included my family and friends, some industry personalities like stylists, influencers, and things like that. It was a very successful launch event from the perspective of, I actually made it a selling event as well. You know, I launched the product, told the story, it was a party, cocktails, all that stuff. But then people could also place orders. So that was my first set of customers, right? Where they actually placed physical orders for the bags. And then, you know, I had a whole bunch of like marketing stuff that I invested in across social media. And of course, my personal social platforms. Hey, yeah. Guys, I just launched this brand. So that was my first set of customers. It's just like family and friends, right? Yeah. But then it started to grow from there, you know, by around January, I started to see my first few customers that were names that I didn't recognize, right? So once you start seeing names that you don't recognize, it's like, oh, this is growing. Like, who's this person?
But how'd you hear about this?
Exactly. So about like 2-3 months after launch, I started seeing names I didn't recognize. Mm-hmm. And then by February, it was like a lot more names I didn't recognize. And I was like, okay, the business is growing. I started investing into more ads on Facebook and things like that. And it was doing really great. And then March 2020, Corona. And let me tell
Corona.
I mean, I'm sure we're all tired of hearing about Corona at this point, but it had a major impact on my business. Mm. Major in the sense that 5 months after I launched, everything came to a standstill. 5 months after I invested $120,000 into my business, everything came to a standstill. I had the first month and a half of the pandemic, I had zero sales, zero. Like literally my Shopify store said zero, like for those months. There was not one sale. And I think, again, I'm such a calm, like optimistic and in some cases spiritual person. Like I believe in like divine, you know, I believe in the universe. I believe in God, a higher power. But that was the first time in a long time that I actually just like started freaking out. Like, did I make a mistake? Like, am I going to lose everything that I've invested? And again, at this point, it was $120,000 in, which was a lot of money to me at the time, a lot of money to anybody, right? But it was a lot of money. And I was just like, I hadn't made a profit yet. You know, everything, even all the sales that I had made prior to that was being reinvested back into the business. Mm-hmm. So it was just like, what's going to happen? And then I had four women on my team, you know, so one was an intern doing marketing, publicist. I had to make the decision. I didn't have any money to pay them. So everyone had to kind of go. And it was just, it was a lot. And then the worst part was.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I had just placed this big order for my spring collection, my spring summer collection. And I remember the shipment date was around like the end of March, but Italy was the market that was hit the worst by the virus, if you recall. So they shut down by the first week of March. I was like 2 weeks away from getting my delivery, and they had to shut down their factory. The factory did not reopen again till like August, September. So I had spring collection with all these bright colors coming to me in September. I had all this marketing and everything. So I had all my working capital tied up into that. And it was just, it was a lot.
How did you stay sane and motivated and just, you know, calm and not completely just have a breakdown? Or maybe you did.
You know, I think I had a couple of freakouts, like maybe not a complete breakdown. I think, honestly, one thing that kept me grounded, I mentioned earlier that this brand is dedicated to my mom. She's my biggest motivation, inspiration. She was an entrepreneur in her time as well. She passed away 20 years ago, but she had several businesses, and she was just a very positive, loving person that everyone loved her. And she had such a really grounded perspective on life, which is where I get a lot of my perspective from. And she used to just have, whenever things would go wrong, right, she used to always say, it could be anything small, you know, she'd be like, no condition is permanent, right? And that's something I heard almost all my life while she was alive. Yeah. No condition is permanent, right? Everything is going to be okay. And she meant it in the sense that whether you have something where when you're in the middle of a storm, it will eventually end. But also when you have good things coming to you as well, enjoy it while you have it, because everything eventually ends. No condition, whether positive or negative, is permanent. So, you know, live in the moment when you have the good things, but also know that the bad things will pass. And honestly, Kayla, that was the perspective that kept me going. I kept on, I was like on Wikipedia every day, reading up on all the pandemics that had happened in the past. I was like, they have an end date. They have an end date.
It's gonna end. There is light at the end of the tunnel. Light.
I don't know when it's going to be, but it's going to end, right? Something's going to happen. Yeah. And like, also, I think I was a little bit protected by the fact that this was not my source of income. That was, you know, I was not taking any money from the business. Like, I still had my job, and I was very grateful for that. And I actually even felt guilty for that, because I saw so many people guilty for momentarily, because I saw so many people losing their livelihood and losing, you know, their financial stability. And so I was like, how can I even dare complain?
Right. You're like, I don't have it that bad. It could be worse. I know that feeling for sure. So guys, have you been thinking about starting your own podcast? So you've been thinking about all these different ideas, or you have one idea that just keeps coming back to you, but you're not sure how to start, or if you have started, you're not sure why you can't grow it as much as you want to grow it. And you're also confused about how to truly make it your side hustle, right? Like, how do you go from having this show that you do in your closet, like I do, to actually making money and actually using it as a platform to grow? Well, that's what I'm here for. I am going to be teaching you how to make podcasting your side hustle. Go over to podcastmoguls.com to register so we can go over some things. All right. And it's also your opportunity to pick my brain. Stay until the end so you can get to the Q&A and you can ask me anything that you want to ask me about podcasting. You can talk to me about challenges, and I am here as your resource. This training is completely free. I love doing this because you can walk away from this training and completely make a difference in your show. So go over to podcastmoguls.com. Make sure you are registered. Again, that's podcastmoguls.com to learn how to make podcasting your side hustle. When were you able to pick things up again? And how did you go about, I'm curious how you were going about your marketing, because I see it now on influencers. I see you've been featured in major publications on TV as well. So how did you reshift your efforts to your marketing, and what did you do to get that kind of coverage?
Yeah, I've always really indexed on building relationships. Relationships are so important to me. And in the first year and a half, 2 years, I said I wasn't going to do any kind of paid influencer. I wanted people that were going to just love the brand, love my story, what I'm about. And, you know, I actually had, like, God placed a lot of people in my life that just like, wow, you know, you have this brand and you're doing it yourself and the products look amazing. We'd love to support. How can we support? Mm-hmm. So people were reaching out to me and I was cultivating those relationships just because, yeah. you know, I was genuinely like, I have had influencers that I've followed for years, you know, for years and years. For instance, like Shayla, All Things Slim, she was yeah. first featured on Fashion Bomb Daily, like maybe in 2012. And I followed her for a long time. So when I launched my brand, I just like reached out to her. I'm like, hey, I've been following you for all this time. I really love yeah. your story. I felt like I knew her family because, you know, I had like seen her kids be born and grow up. And so we connected. We connected yeah. like that. So I just like really invested in cultivating real authentic mm. relationships and like, you know, really telling people my story, taking the time, whoever responded. Now, I will say like I sent hundreds and maybe thousands of emails and I didn't always get a response, right? And that's going to yeah. happen. I think when it happens, at first you feel like, oh, that sucks, that yeah. rejection. But, you know, you learn that it's just a part of the game and people have limited time and resources yeah. to allocate. So it's okay. But, you know, the relationships that I was able to cultivate, I was able to do that. And then I focused on the marketing side as well, like, mm-hmm. you know, shooting campaigns that I felt like were attention grabbing, you know, investing in ad spend, things like that. And then, you know, and also I re-engaged with a PR firm as well okay. to see if they can like help craft the story and also just like the brand image, you know. So it was just like really just like taking the time. And again, it was because like to the title of your podcast, like as a side hustle at the time, it was not the only thing that was bringing in my, actually, I was not taking any revenue from it mm-hmm. at all. So I was able to do that. I was able to take that time to actually see what would work. Yeah. I think a turning point in that journey, actually, at towards the end of the year, Paige and Dr. Dre, she is an influencer on Instagram, but she's a doctor. She's a real life person and she's a real yeah. life friend now. But she fell in love with the bestseller, which is this bag, the convertible executive bag.
Right? How beautiful is that, you guys? Like, look at
that. I can send it to you, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
That's not, so I'll get your I know. I'll get your
information. I did not tell her to do that. And you, no, you have no. to feel pressure to do that. Well, thank
no,
you.
No, but yeah. seriously, I sent her that bag and she mm-hmm. loved it. So she posted yeah. it to her doctor community and yeah. they all loved it too. And then that was a turning point in like, you know, just bringing the business back, you know, like, so I started actually start seeing sales again and, yeah. you know, so it was a combinative effort, you know, of just building those relationships, investing right. in marketing, the ads, and just like, you know, finding people that naturally gravitated towards the story, the authenticity behind the brand and yeah. what I was also the mission of the brand. So I didn't mm-hmm. mention that I give back 5% of all sales to women as grants to start their business, because I know how hard it is when you're starting out. I had the privilege, the fortune of having the financial cushion that from, mm-hmm. you know, having a lucrative job over the years, yeah. but I know not everyone is in that position. So I just hate to see us stifle our creativity mm-hmm. and our ability to actually be a part of this economy, be a part of this next frontier because we don't yeah. have the financial resources. And it's so often our story, you know, and I just want to be a part of changing that dynamic, changing that narrative, you know, and being able to provide that access to Black women and underrepresented yes. women everywhere so we can actually have the resources to be able to start our enterprises, because we absolutely deserve that. We absolutely yes. deserve to build these multi-billion-dollar enterprises, because right. you know, when you look at the corporations and you look at you know, things that have succeeded, I realize that it's not that these people are superior. There's no one that's really smarter or more hardworking than you. It's just access, yeah. you know, access and knowing what's out there. You know, yeah. it didn't have to take me a year to actually start my business, to be honest. Yeah. If I had someone that had a Rolodex of manufacturers or made a connection, right, you know, and said, hey, talk to this person.
Right.
Maybe it wouldn't have taken me a year. You know, it may not needed to take me 10 years to be able to save right. up money to start my brand if I had the financial resources. Now, I'm not giving $1 million grants yet, but anything.
It's coming.
Right. It's yeah. coming. But anything helps when you're starting that journey, because things add up. So if it's just like, hey, let me help you pay for your consumer insights. Let me help you pay for your website, right? So you actually start to sell your product. Let me help you pay for your bookkeeping, or, you know, whatever it is. Like, so those grants go towards those things that, you know, tend to hold people
back. That's so wonderful. Yeah. I love that. That's such a wonderful, wonderful initiative. And I think, you know, you are a shining example of what I want people to be able to do. What I hope people get from this show is that side hustling allows you to take the time you need to invest in everything you need to do before starting your business, so that if you go through a slow period before the business is ramped up, you know, you still have your job to fall back on, hopefully. Exactly. So yeah, I love that you touched on that. And I'm also curious to know, given the research you did, the consumer insights that you did, when it came time to find your pricing in the market, was that an easier process for you, or was it still challenging to figure out where to come in the market? You know, because obviously you are targeting, you're already coming in as a premium luxury brand, as a newbie in the market. How did you approach that?
Yeah, so pricing strategy is something that I've actually done a lot and advise my clients on, right? So for my brand, it was challenging initially because I wanted to find the right price point that was not going to, like, you know, deter people from engaging with my brand, but at the same time respected the luxury approach that was taken. And also some of it was from necessity as well. I was like, if I'm producing this bag for $300, $400, I cannot price it at $300, right? Because then I lose money, right? Yeah. So going into a luxury market necessitated that I had to price at a luxury price point, but I wanted to keep the brand attainable luxury. So my demographic had always been us, right? Women like us that, you know, we have disposable income, we work, you know, we have professional careers, or we do things, right? And we have some money. We can spend money on a $2,000 bag, but we don't necessarily have to. You can get that same quality in a bag that's like $500 or $700. So that's the demographic I wanted to appeal to, the demographic that I recognize, right? So, you know, 25 to 55 year olds that had, you know, a professional career that needed a bag that was functional, that was very stylish and fashionable, but also was going to last from generation to generation, but they didn't want to invest in a $3,000 bag to get that. And I started realizing from my research that all of the big brands, every single big brand out there is producing the same places that I'm producing. Gucci's factory is right next to mine. Like literally they're all in that same radius, right? Yeah. And the only difference is that they've built the brand equity to be able to price their products at a certain level. And they also have a lot more overhead than I do, right? So they have a huge marketing organization. They have a lot of people to pay, right? So that's why their bags are priced. So we're paying the cost of their overhead, not the product, right? The product costs $300 to make, right?
Yeah.
So it's still going to cost $300, or actually maybe even lower, because now they're doing $100,000 unit runs, right? They're doing million unit runs. So their product probably only cost them $150 to make. But we, the consumer, when we buy a high-end luxury brand, we're not paying for the products, we're paying for their overhead, right?
Yep.
So I'm like, if I don't have the overhead, right? And I'm going to keep that overhead down as a direct-to-customer brand, right? At this time, I can pass on that back to as savings to my customer, right? So I wasn't greedy in the sense of like, I didn't want to price it too high, because to me, it was just like, I wanted to build the brand, build the loyalty, build the, you know, the customer base first, you know, and just really invest in that. So revenue was not an initial motivator for me in pricing. It was like really just finding the price point that of course did pay me, because I am still in business. So I'm not like a nonprofit,
right.
But the margin was not exorbitant. I wanted it to be attainable luxury. I wanted it to be like, you're getting this bag for a price point that actually respected the cost of production, and also includes a little bit of margin for my efforts and my marketing costs and all this stuff to be able to bring it to you. So that's how I arrived at the pricing. I made a conscientious decision to keep all the prices less than $1,000, all the bags less than $1,000.
Okay.
This bag is the bestseller. And I started, when I started, I priced it at $595. Yeah. And But unfortunately, last year I had to make the difficult decision to increase the price to $6.95 because everything increased in prices. My manufacturing costs for that bag increased by 20%. Wow. And then DHL once increased their prices too. And I'm like, why are you guys increasing your prices? I'm like, I don't get it. Everybody
going up.
Right,
yesterday's price, y'all already know, it's not today's price.
Not today's price. Literally, that's what all my vendors said. Like, everyone was sending me a notice at the end of the year, like, our prices are increasing by blah, blah, blah. I'm like, why?
Yeah. So what are the signature bags that you have now? I see, you know, you have the Durban bag, you have the belt bag. Talk to us a little bit about all the SKUs that you have.
Yeah. So one thing you see that all the bags, well, not all the bags, most of the bags have a city name, right? So that's inspired by... This was originally a travel brand. And also I love to travel. I've been to over 100 countries. And so I gain inspiration from all these cities that I've been. So I've named the bag the Milan bag. You know, so when you go to Milan, it's very chic and stylish. And so that's the bag that I named after Milan. And then I have the Dubai bag, which is more colorful. So you some of those styles have more color. And then they have the gold chain. You know, gold is synonymous to the Middle East. You know, the Geneva bag, I have that as the messenger bag. So when you go to Geneva, Switzerland, a lot of people are in business, so they're running from here and there. So I created a messenger background that. So anyway, so those are all inspired by a city. The SKUs that are doing the best right now, honestly, since launch, has been that convertible executive bag. It is a bag that literally every woman can see themselves, or men. I have male customers that have this as well, but everyone can see themselves carrying this bag because, you know, it comes in, now it comes in seven different colors, but this is the best-selling color, this olive green one. You can wear it as a chic bag that you're just taking, you know, just I'm a stylish person, I'm wearing this bag, or you can take it to work.
Yeah.
Some people even use it as a mommy bag, right?
Ah, and then because it's of so the chic. Yeah.
Exactly. Because of the functionality where you can turn it into a backpack, right? So I designed that functionality of you can loop the straps around it and put it into a backpack.
So nice.
So it's very convenient. You can wear it in four ways. So this bag has just been doing exceedingly well, you know. So I call it the bag that every woman needs in her closet. This is like you're going out, you're running errands, just pick up your bag and go. Like everyone uses this bag. Where I have customers that bought all seven colors.
What?
It's crazy because I'm like, oh my gosh, beautiful. Like you love this bag that much. The finish is impeccable. And I'm not just saying this because it's my brand. Like, I'm so proud of this bag.
No, it is gorgeous. And I'm so proud of you because, I mean, you can just tell that you took the time to go to Italy and get this quality because you see people start handbag lines. And it's hard. It's hard because when you say you're a luxury brand, like we all have an anchor in our mind of what deems something luxury. And so you know, you really need to come in on that level. And so you made sure that you did that.
Exactly.
So that is just,
I cannot call my brand a luxury brand. I don't have the luxury touches. All the bags come with a dust bag. They have the luxury packaging and just even the way that I like my customer service. That's something that if you read the reviews that people leave, they constantly talk about the service that they receive. I want it to be a luxury service. Like I want it to be like a white glove.
Right.
I mean, I don't have the infrastructure necessarily to make it fully white glove at this point, but I really wanted people to feel good interacting with my brand. Like I want them to feel like they get individualized, personalized attention to what they need.
Listen, so, I can already see. So are you doing this on your own now? Now you talked about having to let go some of your team. As far as customer service, you talked about responding to things. Are you a one woman show? Or have you been able to build some of that team back up?
So here's a lot of entrepreneurs don't like to admit this because, you know, you're on Instagram. People are like, we will respond to your inquiry. Most of the time, it's just a one person shop. Right. So of 2020, like at the end of 2020, well, after the pandemic, once I unfortunately had to let some people go. So the rest of 2020, it was all me. All of 2021, it was all me. And then my brother came in as well towards the end of 2021. And now I have another person as well that's helping me. But if I'm being honest, it's still mostly me. Like my brother helps a lot with the logistics, handling the DHL and the fulfillment and things like that. But when it comes to the strategy and the marketing and even the social media and how I engage with influencers, the design aspects, it's still all me. And, you know, as I grow, I know that I'm going to bolster up the team. Right now it's the three of us. But I've always still be kind of like been conscious of keeping overhead down because I want to keep that price point attainable. You know, the only way to keep the price point attainable is like my costs go down, right? Or I keep the overhead down. So my cost of production rather. But actually that is happening because as I'm ordering more units, I'm getting more sales, I'm negotiating better pricing with my manufacturers, right? Yeah. So that is happening, but I'm building this into $1 billion business. So this is going to be an enterprise, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, so I'm going to have a whole team.
Yeah. What's your advice for people as they are growing? Because it's kind of like you have to make that decision between, okay, you're getting more sales. At some point, yes, it will feel like you're spending so much upfront. Right? The cost of goods, your overhead, but then you also need to ramp that up in order to get more sales. You know what I mean? Like you have to constantly make that calculation. Yeah. And so are you at that point where you're starting to think like that? Like, hey, I know this seems like a lot right now, but as someone who's building $1 billion business, is it a lot or is it helping me to get my next round of sales to this, which will then allow me to invest like this and then get the next round of sales like that? Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the decisions that you have to make as a business owner. And a lot of those decisions are not going to be easy. You're going to lose money before you make money. 100%. And you have to be comfortable with that fact because it is a fact. Whatever business that you're building, you know, if it's going to be a sustainable and profit generating business, you're going to have an investment up front. Right. Mm-hmm. But it's still going to be hard when that investment is coming from your pockets. Right. Yeah. Every single person I pay is still coming from my pockets. So it's like it's coming from my hard work. Like it's not just arbitrary money. It's not like VC money. It's not paper money. It's real money that I made. Right. But it's something I've had to get comfortable with over the last 2.5 years of being in business that in order to grow and scale, you have to invest in your business. You have to invest in marketing. You have to invest in PR. You have to invest in all kinds of things to actually get your business to a point that it's actually lucrative and bringing in the revenue that it deserves. Right. So making those investments up front is super important. And you know that as you're growing and you're scaling, you're able to actually recoup some of those investments back, you know, so it's okay because you actually start to see it. So for instance, one example is Facebook spend, right? If you're only spending $5 in ads, you're only going to get $5 of results, right?
Right, right.
But at first it's jarring to think like, I'm going to invest $1,000 in something that's not tangible. Right. So say you're but then you're like, okay, you start to see some of the return in $1,000. Right. And like, oh, maybe let me try $5,000 a month.
Right,
That's the stage I'm at right now. Cause it is jarring. Cause like ads is not a tangible thing. So I'm like, am I just putting like $5,000 into the ether? Like what the hell?
Right.
But then you start to see the return on that investment. Right.
Mm-hmm. And at least you can track ads, you know, you can track the conversion, you know, with Facebook ads and you can see how people are moving once they come to your site and things like that. So that makes it a little less scary, but I know what you mean. Like, it's not like sometimes you just, you're like, oh, I just want people to buy, you know, I don't want them to just visit. I don't want them to come back. I don't want to retarget them, but it's part of the process.
No, I learned. So one thing I learned I learned in business school, but also just like in school of real life, right? A customer has to see your product 7 times before they actually make a buying decision most of the time. Whether they see it on Instagram, they see it on the influencer, they see it on TV, they see it on something, they have to hear about it and see it about 7 times before they actually go into their pockets. Now, that's the average customer. There's customers that see the bag the first time and they're like, I love it. I want it. I love it. I'm going to make a decision. That's your like easiest sale. But the average sale takes a lot of time for. And, you know, I actually look and I used to study the customer characteristics of people, how long they spent on the site, what sites they, what pages they click on, you know, and also how many times they came. A lot of customers come to the site several times because, again, my price point is not $20, right? It's not $50. Right, right. So they have to, sometimes they have to think about it. Like,
it's a thoughtful decision. Yeah, you have to make a very thoughtful decision. And, but one of the things I love about Shopify, you can kind of be like, hey, did you forget something in your cart?
Or, exactly.
All the e-commerce platforms now, you know, like, hey.
Yeah, exactly.
I know you were here without being creepy. Before we get into the lightning round, I'd love to know, you are a side hustler now. You talked about your timeline and everything like that throughout the day, but when do you have time to do anything else? How are you fitting this into your life? Such a, you know, your business has grown so much. You have a really high level job as an executive at Salesforce. So how are you making this all work?
Yeah. First of all, I have to give a shout out to Salesforce because they're super supportive of my business. And I know that's not a situation that everybody has. Sometimes you feel like you have to hide what you do. Salesforce actually is proud of the fact they collaborated and and put in some press out there in terms of just, supporting the business, supporting people that have that dichotomy of, having that business and also working in corporate, because it's something to be proud of. It says a lot about the person when you're able to perform in this, this fast paced, high demand environment, but also still be able to build a sustainable business. Who wouldn't want that kind of personality in their enterprise, right? So I do have that support, but that said, it's still a lot of work and commitment, right? You have to be able to be self-disciplined, know that this is something that you actually want, because if your heart is not in it, you're going to just burn out really fast and you're going to hate it, right?
Yeah.
So it's something that I love, and I want to actively engage in it. I want to actively engage with my customers, but I'm not going to lie. There's sometimes I'm just like so stressed, so tired. Yeah. I'm just like exhausted. And then I have to attend to this, attend to that. And I'm just like, I just want a break. Like, I just want to break. I'm about to break down. Like, I'm like, I just need some time. So when that happens, you have to make sure that you're caring for yourself. Like, before that even happens, care for yourself every day. So some of my non-negotiables on a daily basis, like, I have to have that quiet time that's just me, right? I'm just like, just zenning out. I read during that time. I do some meditation. I do my manifestations. That is time for me not to think about work, not to think about what I got to do today or anything like that, but just like focus on me. What does Lola need? I also get regular massages. Like, I actually started the schedule of like Monday mornings before, because people like talk about the case of the Mondays. I'm like, how do I balance the case of the Mondays?
That is so cool.
I start my Monday with a massage. So I'm starting my Monday amazing. Yeah, I don't have a case of the Mondays. I'm starting my week amazing, like feeling good, feeling relaxed. And then I also run as well. So I go to Orange Theory, and outside of that, I run during the summers, I run like 5 miles every day. Like, that's something that keeps me very balanced and centered. Mm-hmm. So whatever that thing is, you have to find that thing that keeps you going, and also like have a supportive group of people, whether it's family, whether it's friends, whether you're part of a business community or something, people that encourage you and support you to keep going. I'm very fortunate to have people in my life that are just like, Lola, we see you, keep going. I have friends that tag me and everything. When like on Instagram, people are like, tag Black on, but I'm always being tagged in things.
And I love it.
I love it so much, because people are constantly thinking about how can they support me and how can they make sure that they're elevating my brand. Because, as a newer brand, you're not going to be in everything. You're not going to be included in every list. And so when people, tag you, that's how the visibility grows. That word of mouth is critical at any point that you're in. So I'm very grateful for all of that.
I really like that in talking about how you juggle these two worlds, you emphasize what you do to take care of yourself, because for so many people, the answer to that is work more and work harder. And it's like, no, you make sure that you pour into yourself so that you can withstand the pressure and the stress and not burn out. And so I just really like that you emphasize that Monday massage thing. That is brilliant. That is so cool. So I might have to copy that.
You should. It's life changing. Yeah.
Let's do a quick lightning round. You just answer the very first thing that came to mind. Actually, what you were talking about is one of the questions. So I might have to rework that one, but all right. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So number one, what's a resource? First thing that comes to mind that has helped you in your side hustle journey that you can share with the Side Hustle Pro audience?
First of all, I keep spreadsheets of everything, right? And I keep a plan of everything. Like, and again, it has to be individual, but make sure you're writing things down. When you write things down, it becomes a plan. It becomes, and you're able to take action. So make sure whatever your mechanism is, you're organized, you're organizing your thoughts and your actions and your plans in some ways. And then there's like business resources across the board that you can use and tap into. You can take courses on Coursera about business, Harvard Business Review. Harvard has an open source resource around businesses as well. You can tap into Side Hustle Pro to learn about people's journeys. Yeah, there's so many things out there. If you're looking for the information, you'll find it. But the most important thing is centering yourself first and knowing that you actually have a way of motivating yourself to go and get it. So,
all right. Number two, what's been the best business book or episode or live event that you have attended or, you know, used to pour into yourself?
So I will say, okay, one thing I personally do is I read a lot of business success stories, right? Mm-hmm. So for instance, like I read the story of Louis Vuitton, the actual Louis Vuitton, right? And also Vera Wang, how they got started. And I find motivation in those stories. I also find motivation in hardship, people that have had a difficult journey, but there was they were able to navigate themselves away out of it. You know, so Louis Vuitton, for instance, when he started the brand, he didn't have customers for 10 years. A lot of people don't know that, right? And it started with trunks. Yeah, it started with trunks. And then one day, you know, somebody walked in and was like, oh, I love this, right? And then it started building from there. But it took a long time to become Louis Vuitton. And I think social media sometimes makes people feel like these things happen instantaneously. They don't. They take time. So not a business book. I have several business books that I read, you know, but, you know, for me, the most important thing is just like finding motivation in real life stories, especially stories of perseverance, of overcoming, of tenacity. You know, wherever I see that happening, I'm inspired by that because it lets me know, like, through whenever I'm having a hard time with the business, that I can keep on going as well.
Absolutely.
And,
number three. Mm-hmm. Who is a Black woman entrepreneur that you would trade places with and why? Ooh. For a day. Trade places with for a day.
Whew. Trade places with for a day. it's going to sound corny, but I've really studied Oprah's journey. Yeah. I know a lot of people are not going to say she's an entrepreneur, but she actually is. Yeah. She's running her enterprise and, you know, so, and she has many different elements in there. So I've always admired her and I've always like, if I could trade places with one person per day, give me Oprah. Anyway.
Yes. number four, what is a personal habit that has significantly contributed to your side hustle journey?
Personal habit, meditation, and also just speaking positively to myself. I start my day with a positive intent and positive thought. Yeah. Not that you're not going to encounter things throughout the day, but I always just tell myself, you know, I am a naturally optimistic person. I see opportunity in everything, even in the things that look like, you know, they could be negative. There's opportunity there. So
love that
comes my way.
it's so important. And then finally, what is your parting advice for fellow side hustlers who may be stuck or discouraged trying to juggle their own full-time job and side hustle?
So if you have an idea and this idea has been with you for some time and you've studied the idea, you know that there's something there, and you also know that, you know, this is something that you are passionate about, I just want to say you don't have to have everything perfectly figured out before you go do it. You have to start it first, right? You're going to learn along the way. You're going to do things wrong. You're going to bounce back and you're going to learn and you're going to get back up there. But you have to start. And in terms of balancing it with your day-to-day, You know, it seems scary and intimidating, but, we sometimes don't give ourselves enough credit for what we're capable of, because we don't know what we're capable of until we actually have to do those things, right? Mm. We're more capable than we give ourselves credit for. Mm. You can do it. You know, you have to, of course, make a plan, make sure that you actually have, you're balancing your time, you're balancing your efforts, and, you're saying no to the things that don't matter. And, you're being discerning in terms of what matters. But you can actually balance that time. You can do it. You can do the research. You can be slow and steady.
Yeah.
There's no timeline. Don't let social media rush you into thinking that everyone is an overnight success. That's not the case. Take the time that you need. Make sure you're focusing on understanding the customer. I am hyper focused on customer intimacy. Like, I get feedback from my customers all the time. Yeah. I want to make sure that I'm designing and I'm actually creating products that the market is going to embrace and love, and my customers are going to feel great with. So make sure you understand your customer, your demographic. Figure out what you want to target. You can't be everything to everyone. If somebody's looking for a super stylish, trendy bag, probably not my bag, because my bag is for the everyday professional that also values fashion, right? Find your demographic and be hyper focused on that demographic. Don't try to cater across the board. Don't try to be everything to everyone, because you're going to fail. And also be conscious of who you're getting advice from, right? Because people may try to input into your stuff, and you should listen. You should absolutely keep an open mind. But also keep in mind that people are only talking from their own perspective. And sometimes that perspective may be limited by what they've tried in the past that didn't work, or their failures or whatever it is, right? So make sure you're discerning of what advice you're getting as well.
Yes.
And if you've studied your market, you know your product, you know that there's something there, and you really believe it in your heart, you have to go for it how you want to design it. Because I'm telling you, people told me, you should design this ultra luxurious bag and price it at $5,000. Yeah. Or you should do this, that's XYZ. And I'm like, you have to find that middle ground and just know that you're being true to yourself.
Those were some gems right there. Well, where can people connect with you, Lola? And where can people find out more about your brand after this episode?
Absolutely. So Silver and Riley, all across all socials, Silver and Riley on Instagram. It's the brand is ampersand, but on Instagram, on any social platform, you actually have to spell out the and. So it's Silver, A-N-D, and Riley, Silver and Riley. And then also the website is www.silverandriley.com. That's where you can connect. That's where you can find awesome products. And I also wanted to share a discount code with the Side Hustle Pro community as well. You can get 20% off using the code Side Hustle. 20% off with the code Side Hustle. And that's
thank you so much. That's so generous of you. We really appreciate that. Thank you so very much. And one thing I want to add before we wrap up is this episode has really poured into me today. I can't even quite put the words around it, what specific thing it is that has done that for me. But I just want to thank you for that, because it definitely has. And I can feel that in my soul and in my spirit. And I hope it has done that for you as well, you guys listening. So with that, there you have it. Hey guys, thanks for listening to Side Hustle Pro. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other side hustlers just like you to find the show. And if you want to hear more from me, you can follow me on Instagram at Side Hustle Pro. Plus, sign up for my 6-bullet Saturday newsletter at sidehustlepro.co/newsletter. When you sign up, you'll receive weekly nuggets from me, including what I'm up to, personal lessons, and my business tip of the week. Again, that's sidehustlepro.co/newsletter to sign up. Talk to you soon.
Mom deserves
deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.